Okay. Shalom to everybody. Today, our class in questions in Emunah, we have a couple of interesting questions. We'll see how many we can cover. The first question is, why are some people convinced that Israel is occupying the land illegally? Good question. And I imagine most of you, somewhere along the line, will have to know how to defend Israel in terms of hasbara, in terms of if you're going to be on college campuses where there's a lot of anti-Israel accusations. This is a very common accusation. So let me ask you, first of all, how would you relate to this accusation of Israel occupying the land of the Arabs? What would you say?
I've thought about this a lot.
Okay.
Every time I think about it, and every time I think about it, I think Americans are also occupying the land.
That's interesting.
Actually, even worse, because we killed everyone.
What, in terms of the American Indians?
Native Americans, yeah.
Native Americans, yeah. That's interesting. That's a very interesting point, especially in Israel, because, you know, if you were to tell that claim to an American, and you say, listen, you Americans, you took the land away from the Native Americans, from the Indians, they'll say, ah, that was 300 years ago, we're talking about today. Now, in Israel, it's a very interesting situation, because if you're talking about today, we have the state. We're in control. If you talk about what was historically, well, we were here before the Arabs. In other words, either way you look at it, the Arabs can't say, well, we were here first, because no, Israel was here first. In other words, that's a very interesting suggestion. Did you ever think of it that way? Y'all catch that? In other words, whether you look at ancient history or whether you look at modern history, the land belongs to the Jewish people. Why should all of a sudden in the middle somebody decide, oh, we're just going to start the issue, we're going to start the debate right here, not before and not after? Do you all see that's not a very logical or fair way of having a debate? Okay, that's an interesting point. What else would you say regarding the ta'ana, the complaint that Israel is occupying the land of others?
That is fake news.
Oh, okay. But you know what? Today you could just say, well, that's fake news, and that's what President Trump does sometimes, and just close the issue. But you know, there is such a thing as fake news. That is definitely true. And one of the problems, and this is another point, that the world has difficulty understanding, why would the Arabs start up with us if we are correct? In other words, usually in a war, you look at somebody who is the bully, right? There's the good guy, and there's the bad guy, right? The weak guy, he's weaker, and the bully comes to pick on him. And how do you tell who's the good guy and who's the bad guy? By seeing who wins the war. And whoever wins the war, I guess he's the bully. The problem with that logic is that it doesn't work regarding fanatic Muslims. Bichlal, the laws of logic don't work with suicide bombers. You all know what a shahid is? Have you heard the term shahid? Shahid is somebody who is considered holy if he gives his life in fighting against the enemies of Islam. Or jihad. Have you heard the term jihad? Okay, so the jihad is, that's what they call a holy war. Now, they don't mind dying in the cause for the holy war. And they don't mind losing, because even if they lose here, they believe that they are going to get their reward in the world to come. And that is the problem, first of all, that Israel has dealing with suicide bombers. that if somebody doesn't care about his own life, you can't work with him logically. You all understand that? There's usually a logical person, you can deter him, right? There are certain things that he won't do if it's not worth it for him. For example, if he's going to die. But that whole issue of deterrence, that logic doesn't work with suicide bombers or fanatic Muslims who, by them, their religion is more important than their logic. And that's why the world has difficulty understanding, how is it that the Arabs are the aggressors? All right, why should they be the aggressors? They always lose. They always have more casualties. The Arabs are weaker. So why should they start up with somebody who's stronger? And what the world doesn't understand is they don't understand the mindset of Islam, or of fanatic Islam. And, hi, Ricky. And that changes all of logic. Do you all see that point? That's a very important point. Because if you're debating the issue on a college campus with somebody who's studying for their degree, he or she is probably an intellectual. It works on rational thinking. They will have difficulty understanding why would the Arabs be the aggressors, because they're always suffering more casualties and they're always losing, right? But when you bring in the issue of the suicide bombers and the jihad and the shaheed, people who are dying to die, right? That sounds like a weird sentence, but that's what they are. They're dying to die for the sake of fighting for Islam. So that's another point. Any other points? For those who joined us, we're talking about how would you answer somebody or those who claim that Israel is occupying the land of other people? Any other points? You know, another point that I should raise, and this is something that David Ben-Gurion raised when he was brought before the League of Nations, and they asked him, what right do you have to the land of Israel? He took out a Tanakh, and a Tanakh is accepted also by the Christians, also by the Muslims. The Muslims do agree that the land of Israel was promised to the Jewish people. And if anybody wants to see more about that, you can Google Professor Mordechai Kedar. Mordechai Kedar in English, it's K-E-I-D-A-R. And he knows Islam. And he, in fact, proves from the Quran that even the Muslims believe that the land was given to the Jewish people. There's another aspect that I think needs to be addressed here. And that is, somebody sent me a link once that just seemed too crazy, and I had to go in and see it, where the heading of the link was that most of the United Nations Security Council decisions since the United Nations was founded after World War II, most of their decisions have been against the state of Israel. Now, how is it possible that we, little Israel, we are the biggest problem of the world, and we are a bigger problem than all of the world's problems put together? Right? The world has had a lot of problems since World War II. Look at communist Russia. Look at the Chinese who take out organs from living political prisoners to sell their organs for transplants. Look at ISIS. Look at Islamic fundamentalism, right? Look at September 11th. Look at Saddam Hussein and Iraq. Look at Iran and their nuclear... The world has had a lot of problems, but if you take all of those problems put together, the United Nations has more of a problem with Israel than all those problems put together. Which means that the answer is, in one word, anti-Semitism. And just like we once discussed, what is the cause of anti-Semitism, and what logic can there be in anti-Semitism? The issue is just an anti-Semitic issue. Because again, like we said before, if you look at history, the Jews were here first. If you look in modern times, the Jews are here now. So why should we dafka look in the middle? Nobody in the world does that on any piece of land in history. And that's, bekitzur, that's another issue that has to be brought up, that anti-Semitism, you know, sometimes the Arabs say, hey, we're Semites too. So you use the word Jew-hating rather than anti-Semites. Aiden, what do you want to say? It looks like you have something on your mind.
I do have something on my mind. I was thinking about it, and it's just like, it's really crazy because, like, you bring up, like, the I was thinking about the Native American thing, and it's, like, really crazy that, like, if you bring up the Native American thing to, like, Semites, like, you find a way to justify it, but as soon as, like you say something, crazy, yeah, as soon as, like, the Jews do anything, like, they find, like, every single way to, like, nitpick. I don't know, it's just interesting.
Yeah. So, that's anti-Semitism in a nutshell. What
just... kind of, like, understand anti-Semitism in a way. I know that's bad to say, but, like, the Jews walk around thinking that they're, like, better than everyone else. Like, obviously, like, I know that we're right, but, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, we walk around, like, saying, like, oh, like, we, like, dress neat, it's, like, we stand out, so, like, obviously people are going to hate us if we act like we're better than everyone else.
Yeah, I think there are two points here regarding dressing sanua. You know, you also have the Muslims and also the Amish, and there are a lot of people dressed.
Not a bad example, but like other things.
So then the idea of a dislike for the unlike, that's a separate issue because that simply is not nice. You know, why should you not like somebody just because he's black or just because he's white? But the first issue that you mentioned touches on something that we discussed at the beginning of the year. What is the difference between the Germans' theory of Aryan supremacy and, like Ayala says, the Jewish claim that we're the chosen people? Right? That's a good question. Anybody remember what we discussed then, or how would you answer that? What's the difference? Repeat the question. What is the difference between, Ayala says, that maybe people don't like the Jews because we think that we're superior, just like the Germans thought that they're superior. And we say that German superiority, that Aryan supremacy, is really wrong. It's really immoral. So what's the difference? Anybody see a difference? Okay, so the question is, so why isn't that wrong? It does sound wrong.
It's not necessarily wrong. I don't think it's not wrong. It's just, it's like looked at, how do you explain it?
It's looked at as wrong. It's seen as wrong. I'll tell you, Ayala, how when this came up in the class, the way I see it is that when a German says that he is supreme, he does it at the expense of other people, right? He wants to conquer Europe. He wants to kill the Jews. He wants to kill the gypsies. He wants to murder those who are not like him. Jews, not only do we not put down the others, but we claim that our goal as the chosen people is to bring morality to the world. Historically, we brought the Ten Commandments to the world, we brought morality to the world, and you know what? It may sound as arrogance, but I would be the happiest person in the world for the Germans to make the same claim. Let them claim that their God, their role is to bring morality to the world. And let the French claim that. Let everyone claim that their role is to bring morality to the world. You know what? The world would be a nicer place. Ayala, do you see the difference? Ayala?
Yeah.
Do you see the difference?
Yeah, I see.
In other words, it doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound nice, like Angie said, but I really honestly would have no problem with any and every country saying that their job is to bring morality to the world and to teach morality to the world and to be a good example of morality to the world, to be a light to the nations. If that's what it means to be a light to the nations, great. Let the Germans be that and let everyone claim that that is what they're going to do. You know, I don't have a problem with that. Okay, anyway, let us move on to question number two. And this is also another good question. Why are some mitzvot, like Hashavat Aveda, returning lost objects, only applicable to other Jews?
Sorry, one second. Well, before we get to that question,
yeah.
I still don't understand why Israel isn't illegally occupying the land.
Why isn't Israel illegally occupying the land? Because
yeah, why is it legal?
Are you talking about 1967 borders or 1948 borders?
Everything.
Oh, so let's start with 1948 borders.
They did technically take over.
No. England and the Allies conquered the Middle East from the Axis in World War I. You remember the Axis and the Allies, the good guys and the bad guys? Right? Y'all remember that? So the Turks, who had run the Middle East until World War I, they sided with the Germans, with the Axis, with the bad guys. And the good guys, the Allies, that's England, Australia, America, France, South Africa, they defeated the Turks, conquered the Middle East, and divided it up where the French took the northern part, that is Syria and Lebanon, and the English took the southern part, that's Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Israel, and Egypt, and they recognized in the Balfour Declaration that this small piece of land in the middle of the southern part, which was given to the English, that they are recognizing in the Balfour Declaration as the right of the Jews to have a Jewish state in that place. That was 1917. In 1920, the League of Nations, in the Convention of San Remo, they rectified and voted and unanimously accepted the Balfour Declaration, again, recognizing the right of the Jews to have a state in the land of Israel. Now, this mandate that the English had this mandate to hold the land and to little by little give it over to the Jews. And to make a long story short, in 1947, the United Nations decided, okay, let's once and for all make a border here. And that was called the Partition Plan in 1947, where the United Nations decided to give the state of Israel to the Jews and Transjordan to the Arabs. In other words, Israel was given the state of Israel in the 1948 borders internationally. Okay, so that's regarding the 1948 borders. We have a right to exist to a Jewish state in the land of Israel from the Balfour Declaration all through the Partition Plan. The Arabs didn't like it, but just like they got half of the Middle East, half of the land of Israel, we got half of the land of Israel. And just like they had no right to try and take away our part, as they tried in the War of Independence in 1948, we have no right internationally to take away their part. But the problem was, in 1967, the Arabs decided that the time has come, after 20 years of trying, we are finally going to push the Jews into the sea, into the Mediterranean Sea. And you can read newspapers. By the way, something that you got to be careful of in terms of anti-Semitism is when you go into Wikipedia, because there's a lot of anti-Semitism, the people in Wikipedia, they definitely are not unbiased. Very often they take the Arab side, not because the Arabs are right, but simply because of anti-Semitism. You know, that doesn't mean that they're right. Just like when most of the goyim say that the Jews put blood in their matzah, that doesn't mean that they're right, but it just means that they don't like the Jews. But if you look in the newspapers, that's the best way of learning history, to look in the newspapers, the magazines of 1967. By the way, if you go through also the pro-Israel and also the anti-Israel sources on the web, you will also be able to understand, to get the whole picture. But I'm just saying, if you just spend 5 minutes to go into Wikipedia and you don't really study it well, there's a good chance that you'll just get Arab propaganda, which doesn't help understand the truth. But what happened in 1967? The Arabs decided once again to try and push us into the sea. They blockaded Israel. They didn't let Israel, they didn't let anything into the land of Israel. And they were strangling Israel economically. And to make a long story short, Israel had to fight a defensive war, which, thank God, Baruch Hashem, with the help of God, we finished off and succeeded within 6 days, miraculously, defeating the Syrians who wanted to kill us in the north, the Jordanians who wanted to kill us in the east, and the Egyptians who wanted to kill us in the south. Now, the fact that they tried to kill us, nobody disagrees with that. I, by the way, have in my house the Time magazine. Bezrat Hashem, hopefully you'll all make it back to Israel, and I'll show you the Time magazine, which describes, my parents saved the Time magazine a week before the Six-Day War, and a week after the Six-Day War, and you see very clearly, everybody knows that the Arabs are the aggressors, and the Jews are fighting a defensive war. Now, in this defensive war, in warfare, you can't just fight and defend yourselves. You also have to push the enemy back, because they were using their land next to the land of Israel to attack Israel. So Israel, in a defensive war, enlarged our borders in 1967. If anybody asks, isn't Israel occupying the West Bank, or Yerushalayim, or the Golan Heights, I would just tell them, well, tell the Arabs not to start any more wars, because you can't start a war, vow that you will push the Jews into the Mediterranean Sea, and then complain when the Jews are victorious in defending themselves, right? Nobody disagrees that the 1967 Six-Day War was a defensive war. It was very clearly a defensive war. And so that's why I asked, if you're talking about the quote-unquote occupation of 1948 or the quote-unquote occupation of 1967, either way you look at it, Israel is not an occupier. We are returning to our land, also justly and also internationally, and also we were just defending ourselves, not to mention that the land was given to us by the Tanakh. It just so happens that the Arabs were the aggressors, and they really forced us to liberate that which Hashem promised us. But that's where the God of history comes in. Okay? Okay, can we move on to the second topic? Okay. The second topic, we only have 10 minutes, is why are some mitzvot, like Hashavat Aveda, returning a lost object, only applicable to other Jews? Right? Why is there no isur to talk lashon hara about Gentiles? Why is there no prohibition to take interest from Gentiles? Very good question. Chevra, how would you address this question?
that's exactly why people are anti-Semitic, because the fact that we could even see that, like, we could talk bad about a non-Jew, but Jews we have to talk good about. So obviously people are going to be anti-Semitic if we're sitting there, like, making rules against, like,
Yeah, fair. So hopefully within the next 10 minutes, Ayala, you will see very clearly that that is not the situation. Okay? Maybe it was even you who asked the question. I don't know. But, Chevra, point number one, the most logical thing in the world is to relate specially to your brother. Right? If I'm in the street and I give a chocolate bar to my brother, and some total stranger comes up and says to me, hey, I want a chocolate bar too. You know, you say, Habibi, he's my brother. By the way, this is something, I don't know if I ever told you, whenever I finish on Yom Revi'i, on Wednesdays in Midrashet Moriah, before I teach in Midrashet Harova, I go visit, there's a Mossad, an institution for people with special problems. And I have a friend there, his name is Nachum. Ever tell you about Nachum? Yeah, I mentioned him. Anyway, so we have people with special needs, they like having order. So we have an order. I come to him every Wednesday at the same time. And I give him an orange. And I buy him a Diet Coke. And then we play catch up to 50. Not 49, not 51. I throw the ball to him, he throws the ball to me 50 times. Anybody who works with kids with special needs know they like having things orderly, okay? Anyway, whenever I buy him a Coke, almost every time one of the other guys in the institution comes up and says to me, I want you to buy me one too. And then another guy comes, and pretty soon I have the whole... Now, if I were a rich man, you know, I'd buy to everybody. But the idea is that the Jewish people, we have a special extra credit that we give to our brothers. Towards the Gentiles, we act like the Gentiles do to each other. For example, Ayala, in the example that you gave, Gentiles, do they have a prohibition of talking Lashon Hara to each other? They don't. Gentiles, do they have a prohibition of talking Lashon Hara or not saying anything positive about somebody if you know somebody will answer something negative about them?
Wait, Rabbi, can I ask you a question, though?
Let me just finish the point and then we'll move. I'll take your comment, okay? Write it down so you don't forget. Gentiles, they take interest from each other. In other words, when we take interest from Gentiles, when we are allowed to talk Lashon Hara about Gentiles, we simply are acting to Gentiles the way Gentiles act to Gentiles. That's exactly what they do, and that's what's accepted in the world. Towards our Jewish brothers, we have a specially high demand. And that demand is way above and beyond anything that's accepted in the non-Jewish world. Now, incidentally, and by the way, you could see this very clearly, after Jews have this special credit that we act especially moral, super moral, to our brothers, you will see that those same Jews, when it comes to Gentiles, also are more sensitive when it comes to Lashon Hara, simply because they're sensitive to the issue of Lashon Hara. So even when it comes to Gentiles, they don't feel right talking Lashon Hara. The same thing about returning lost objects. We have an obligation. If you see a sock, you see a lost sock, you have an obligation to go around all the dormitories in Beit Ruby looking for the person who owns the sock. Now, in the Gentile world, you don't have to do that, but believe me that if a Jew is accustomed to all of the mitzvot ben Adam l'chavero on a super level of Musar, then his Musar towards the Gentile will be above average of the Musar of the average Gentile to the average Gentile. Okay? That's point number two. Point number three, I'll just mention before I take Aiden's comment. I don't know if you people... you know what? Let me take Aiden's comment before we get on to the third point. Yeah, Aiden.
They don't have, like, any prohibitions in general, though. Like, regarding the gossip and stuff, like, I just don't see, like, why that makes a difference. Like, if we're really trying to be, like, the moral group, then it should apply to everyone, not just, like, whatever. And this isn't something that costs you money, like... I don't really feel like that's fair to say.
Yeah. Will you agree with me that it's difficult not to talk Lashon Hara?
Of course.
Okay. So that is what mankind does. Now, the Jewish people have this concept, this Torah concept, where God obligates us an extra credit that, again, we do want to be in Or LaGoyim. We do want to get to that stage where not only do we give that super morality to our brothers and to ourselves, but also to Gentiles, and also the Gentiles should do it to Gentiles. On the other hand, the Torah only obligates something that every 13-year-old boy and every 12-year-old girl can observe. Right? Now, I think everybody would agree that it's very difficult to obligate super morality to each and every person. To expect a 12-year-old girl or a 13-year-old boy to be super moral to every single person, that's a pretty big call. And also, God knows what we are capable and what we are not capable. Because I really do not believe that a 13-year-old boy or 12-year-old girl is capable of fulfilling all of the mitzvot ben Adam l'chavero towards each and every person. So what the Torah demands us is, you can do this. This we can obligate every 12 and 13-year-old to do, towards your parents, towards your brother, towards your cousin, towards the Jews. So that super morality, again, is especially Jewish things towards Jews. It inevitably brings the issues of slandering and returning lost objects. It does bring it to mankind. And we also, being that we are sensitive to it, we will be more sensitive to the Gentile than they are to themselves. But I have to bring another point, which also completes the issue. Chevra, the Torah was written addressing the Jewish nation living in the land of Israel, in the Jewish state, speaking Hebrew among Jews. That is what the Tanakh is addressing. In other words, we are supposed to live among Jews. We're not supposed to be living among Gentiles. And the fact that for 2,000 years, unfortunately, we were in exile, that doesn't mean that's the way it was. And that doesn't mean that that's the way it should be. And it doesn't mean that that's the way it will be. Because if you look in history and you look in the future, we are meant to be in the land of Israel, in the state of Israel, where our bus drivers, our brothers, and our bank tellers, and our army, and our policemen, and our electrician, and our garbage collectors, and everyone is Jewish. And that's really the framework that the Torah is addressing. And that's why you'll see that most of the mitzvot cannot be done in Chutz La'aretz. Now, you and I, we grew up in Chutz La'aretz, so we don't even notice that. But if you look at the 630 mitzvot, most of them can only be done in the land of Israel, because this is where the Torah is meant to be lived. And to the same reason, just like most of the mitzvot are for the land of Israel, most of the mitzvot are for the people of Israel, because that's who we're supposed to be living with. I live in Kol Chav HaShachar. Everyone's Jewish. In the state of Israel, obviously there are non-Jews, but the Arabs live in the Arab cities, and the Jews live in the Jewish cities, and that's the way it's meant to be. So that's also technically the Tanakh addresses living in the land of Israel and dealing with the super morality towards your Jewish brother. And then once we have this state, which hopefully is supposed to be that light to the nations, we can be an example to others as well. Ayala, make sense?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions on this issue? Okay, I see we have one topic left for next time. But any other questions, please give me some topics that interest you.
Thank you so much.
Any other questions that you'd like to discuss for next time?
I'm going to think of some.
Okay. Actually, all of you have my email, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have it right here.
Okay. So if you can think of some topics, please send me my email. Please send me your questions. Okay. Have a Shabbat Shalom. Good to see you all.
Thank you so much.
Call to Shalom. Bye.